Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Wealth. I'm Alex Dieger. I'm back from my 1 week vacation, back in the hot seat, and thus I have displaced my co-host, Ian Wenick. But Ian is still here. Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, my coup attempt was very short-lived.
Yeah, I feel it was a state-sanctioned coup. To be fair, you know, we agreed on it all beforehand, and we should say we're also joined as well by Andrew Forsh, who was here last week with Ian on some sort of weird co-chair, co-guest structure that you had, but you passed the metaphorical hat excellently, I thought. And contrary to your speculation on the podcast, I did listen to the episode. Now, did I listen to it as soon as it came out? History doesn't relate, but certainly since I've been back in the office, I've caught up on it. I thought it was wonderful. I honestly feel a little threatened. I'm not sure I need to be here anymore. But yes, a great job. However, there were a couple of questions left unanswered, I felt. So rather than starting straight with the news, listener, I'm sorry, indulge us for a moment. We talked about what would be, or rather you talked about what would be your sort of your master's marker equivalent. For people who didn't listen to the last episode, this is about the RAA executive who got to be a marker at the Masters, what are we, like 10 days or so ago. And Andrew's, yours was playing for the Red Sox. But Ian, you asked a question, but as a massive sports fan, you didn't answer. Effectively, what would be your sort of your fantasy sports role if you were sort of plucked from the crowd to perform something unexpected? You must have an answer for this.
Yeah, well, now, first, I'm very happy that I did not go with my original planned fun question, which was, which Pokemon would you choose to carry out household tasks? That was beyond all of our areas of expertise.
So yeah. you could hear the listeners just log off as soon as that's asked. So I am glad you didn't ask that.
I know someone who got 90 minutes of content out of that question. But anyway, I would want to lead for the New York Giants. I want to be the quarterback on the road in Philadelphia, hostile crowd, snow flurries, grass stains on the jersey. I want to lead a drive with 5 minutes on the clock, down by four, get into the end zone, try to snap the now going on 12-year losing streak to the Eagles in Philadelphia. That'd be my choice.
Yes, I knew you'd have one, and I knew it would be phenomenally specific. So that's good. Whereas Andrew sort of, you know, reached around for a bit of the Olympics before settling on baseball, which I think is the sort of thing I would do as well. I'd be like, oh, maybe try and sort of win the Ashes for England against Australia in the cricket. I'm not going to go too much into that because, much like the Pokemon question, I think it's a surefire way to lose a large chunk of our listeners. Well, look, quite enough of our sporting fantasies for the time being. Let's get down to business and talk about some of the biggest stories from the last 7 days. And again, we've talked about this quite a bit recently, but I think we have to start with LPL and Commonwealth. Obviously, as everyone knows by now, massive deal for LPL to buy Commonwealth. But we have some updates. So, Ian, kick us off.
No, I mean, I think it's slightly mentioned because, look, this is probably the highest stakes, most consequential transaction that we've had in the wealth management industry, probably since we started Citywire RAA in 2018. I mean, just in terms of the scale of the transaction, the money at play, the fact that it's a public company acquisition, you know, I think that this is going to be...
So quick recap, there's about 2,900 advisors effectively in play here.
Yep.
Well, that's how big Commonwealth is, and that's obviously what LPL is acquiring. Asset-wise, which was just shy of sort of 300
We're at 285 billion. And so
maybe minus some tariff-induced market turmoil, but yeah, give or take.
And the bottom line is that what we're dealing with right now, it's almost like, to make a sports analogy, it's almost like college basketball, where with the transfer portal now, you have to re-recruit all of your players every single season. And so if you're LPL, their challenge right now is they have to re-recruit all these Commonwealth advisors and keep them from jumping to different broker-dealers, other RAs. And to that end, we broke this week, based on a memo that I viewed, that Commonwealth Chief Executive Wayne Bloom promised advisors that if LPL does away with the Commonwealth brand name, then the balance on the forgivable loans that are being used as recruiting bonuses, those will be forgiven.
Okay, so let's take a quick step back here for a moment. So obviously, I think we probably talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but this was after the deal, the big question remaining was, okay, so what is LPL going to offer to those Commonwealth advisors to incentivize them, well, effectively to stay, but ultimately to stay and thus be a part of LPL. And so we broke the story. I think that was a you and Andrew special. Was Sam involved in this? I can't remember now.
Yeah, it was a team effort.
Team effort, and that was around these forgivable loans. So maybe quick recap on broadly the forgivable loans that have been offered, and then the context here being that then they won't have to pay the balance if LPL, for whatever reason, decides to scrap the Commonwealth branding.
Yes, exactly. So what we broke a couple weeks ago is that LPL has been offering Commonwealth advisors these checks, which represent a basis point bonus based on the total assets that the Commonwealth advisor oversees. And those bonuses generally have a forgivable lockup period, which amortizes over time. So
in this case, it's 8 years. If you stay for the full 8, you don't repay.
Exactly.
But if at any point you leave, you pay the balance. It's some kind of pro-ratering going on there. And the branding thing is important. Why?
So the branding thing to me is important is because Commonwealth advisors, I think, are really possessive. They want to guard their culture. And there are a lot of advisors that join Commonwealth because they didn't want to work for an LPL or a Statera. They wanted to stay with Commonwealth because they like their service model. And I think this is something that LPL executives are keenly aware of too. It's why when Rich Steinmeier spoke on the investor call when the deal first announced, he said, we want to preserve what Commonwealth does best. We want to preserve their culture. And
they said they'd keep the brand. When they announced the deal, they said they'd keep the brand.
They did.
Okay.
And I think this is LPL trying to put its money where its mouth is, putting it in writing, which is what Wayne Bloom explicitly cited, saying, look, we believe in your brand identity, your culture. And yeah, if we change this, if they go back on their word, then this is the financial incentive.
Got it. Fascinating. And in general, do we have any idea how that's gone down? Do we think people sort of take it seriously? Does it indicate that the fact they felt they needed to put that out there, does that indicate that there was some skepticism about the keeping the Commonwealth culture before?
I do think that, and this is something that you kind of glean from social media, is there does appear to be some skepticism among some of the rank and file Commonwealth advisors. But to be honest, that's a path that I think we really need to report out more, is how do the advisors on the ground feel about this, and how are they reacting? Because look, this is and if you look in the story, Wayne Bloom even directly references that skepticism among the Commonwealth advisor community. And so clearly the executives are aware of it, and this might be a relatively small concession from a pure financial perspective. I mean, look, LPL set aside nearly $500 million to deal with retention payments and onboarding, but it's clearly a broader signal that Commonwealth and LPL recognize that there's skepticism around this deal, and they're doing what they can during this mad dash to keep advisors before the closing, before this deal closes, to show, hey, we care and we are committed to good faith, and they're taking it seriously.
Okay, exactly. So let's talk about the other side of this very quickly then. Obviously, that's what LPL is doing to try and keep these people. But in the meantime, they're not acting, obviously, in a vacuum. There are rivals out there who, again, we've reported on, I think, Statera to put an open letter out there.
Yes, which is an unprecedented kind of move.
And other people, and obviously other large brokerage firms, RIAs, are also, all sniffing around and trying to do something to get these.
This is a feeding frenzy. I mean, that's what it is right now. It is a feeding frenzy, and LPL is trying to keep as many fish in the net before the sharks can eat the catch.
And this is where we can bring Andrew in. This is smooth segue alert. This is not LPL's only sort of retention recruitment battle, if we can use that word, that they've got going on. They've also got an ongoing legal battle with rival brokerage Ameriprise, again also over sort of advisors moving to and from those businesses, and we had a bit of an update on that this week, Andrew.
Yeah, that's right. And this is I'll kind of start by giving just a little bit of context. So over the last, 4 or 5 years, a number of advisors have left Ameriprise to join LPL. This got to the point that Ameriprise was unhappy with, and Ameriprise kind of, I believe, initiated this whole saga, at least in court, by suing LPL last year. You know, they took issue with certain of LPL's alleged recruiting practices, you know, the usual kind of allegations that we see with advisor recruitment lawsuits around misappropriation of trade secrets, that kind of thing.
Which always kind of sounds much more sort of nefarious and cool than it often is, right?
Yeah, that's right. And you know that because there's generally not so much variance. Whether it's broker dealers, RIAs, these recruiting lawsuits generally look quite similar.
Is people basically taking sort of client data with them or information about their clients?
Client data. And there are certain restrictions around what data and how it's supposed to be used under the broker protocol, which we can get into a little bit. That brings us to LPL's side of the story here, which is essentially LPL has filed a... Well, let me back up before I get ahead of myself here. So there are these lawsuits that are happening from Ameriprise to LPL. Ameriprise sues LPL. Ameriprise also sued several of the advisors in question in FINRA arbitration. So all of these things are ongoing. And I think the number is like 30 advisors, I believe, over a 3 or 4 year period. It's no small number. And that represents quite a fair kind of base of assets as well. So Ameriprise is trying to stop this from happening. One of the things that Ameriprise did was it took issue with the way that LPL has used some client data in recruiting, right? And so recently, at the beginning of this year, Ameriprise sent out a data breach notice to clients. And this was not just, as Ameriprise has stated, this is not just clients that moved to LPL, but it's other clients who moved to other firms. So Ameriprise sends out this data breach notice saying, hey, you used to be our client and you're not anymore. Your advisor or other kind of parties at these firms that you're now working with have in some way misused your client data. They have done something either revealing data that they weren't supposed to under the broker protocol or somehow misusing it in transitioning your accounts over. And LPL took issue with that. And so last week, LPL filed suit and asked a court for a temporary restraining order over this data breach notice. And at the core is a defamation claim. LPL is saying, Ameriprise, you've defamed us by basically implying that account holders may be at risk of identity theft and that somehow we've done something wrong with your data. And so LPL has asked the court for a TRO, a temporary restraining order, that would stop Ameriprise from doing that again, and also that would kind of order Ameriprise to disclose the names of clients who received that notice. Are you guys confused yet?
I'm actually okay with it because, yeah, so it's, I mean, I guess, yeah, because it's quite a scary thing if you got a letter, anytime you get some sort of email or letter saying, you know, your identity... some sort of data breach, you know, I think it sets off alarm bells about sort of identity theft, particularly if it's sensitive financial information, which obviously it's likely to be if, let's say, you're a wealth management client. I don't want to be condescending. There's an age profile thing here. A lot of these clients will be older because they're wealthier because, you know, they got the money. And yeah, I think it'd be pretty scary. And so you can imagine that would set alarm bells ringing and that could have an issue on those clients staying with their advisor, etc. So you can see from LPL's point of view why you'd be pretty annoyed about that, you know, without us now getting into the wheres and whys of who may or may not have done anything wrong. Okay, so that's another ongoing sort of, I suppose, recruitment battle. I suppose in LPL's favor here, they're the ones who've got the advisors here. They're the sort of, they're winning in that regard. But there might be some other sort of price to pay down the line, depending where this suit goes.
Yes, that's right. And as we've discussed with, other kind of RIA to RIA litigation, these outcomes can sometimes set a precedent for advisor recruitment moves in a given state or that follow a certain process or that, involve certain firms. This lawsuit is about, you know, a cluster of advisors, but it could have some far-reaching implications for LPL, for broker dealer recruiting standards. There's this bulk upload tool that LPL's been using to kind of compile client information. So that's kind of at the core of this as well, is how they're going to actually use and store and compile this client data. And so the new news this week is essentially Ameriprise has filed an initial defense. Just quickly, the core of the defense is, well, everything that we said is true. And with a defamation claim in basically any scenario, the strongest defense against a defamation claim is whether or not there is substantial truth here to the claims that are made. If something is true, it can't be defamation. And so that's what Ameriprise is saying.
You're dangerously close to getting into the one area of law I think we all actually understand, where as journalists, when you get into libel and defamation and suddenly we're all sort of part-time lawyers from those occasions where we have to sharpen our skills and defend ourselves or grovel. Okay, so that's where things are now. So they filed that defense, and I guess what bull's back in Ameriprise's court?
Back in LPL's now, maybe. I think the first, at the core, I think the next step is going to be dealing with the TRO request. In the meantime, all of these arbitration proceedings are carrying on, and the underlying lawsuit over the recruitment is still carrying on. But for now, I think the first step is to deal with, if I'm a judge, if I'm the court, whether or not to grant this request for a TRO. And so we'll keep an eye on that and see what happens, I suppose. I don't want to speculate, you know.
Yeah, God forbid we spend 20 minutes on a podcast speculating. Okay, and then let's bring this back to Commonwealth quickly, which is to say that there has been an update there. We don't know that this is directly related to the LPL deal, but Ian, the story is?
Yeah, so we were our handy-dandy SEC ADV new filings update dropped earlier in the week, and we spotted a large Commonwealth team set up their own RIA earlier this April, and then Andrew did some digging and found out that they managed north of $2 billion as of the middle of last year. And look, I mean, this is the first firm that we've seen break away post-deal announcement. I think that, look, these RIAs take time to set up, so don't want to draw like a bright straight line connecting this breakaway to the transaction?
Maybe a dotted line rather than a bold line, or would that even be too far?
We can do a couple dots. We can do a couple dashes.
Okay.
A couple dashes.
The point here is, Andrew, so it's a $2 billion firm.
Yeah.
And they're just fully RIA. They're not affiliating with another sort of rival or
anything? Yeah, they're going full indie. I will say to your point there, they applied for registration as an independent RIA with the SEC, I believe, on the 27th of March. And I think our initial story reporting that a deal had been agreed to was maybe that very day. And so I would, again, speculate that this may have been in the works prior.
Yeah.
Of course, we don't know what rumblings maybe were out there internally. I don't want to, call too much attention to that. But yes, it is a notable team. 10 offices in 5 states, maybe 20 or 30 advisors, 60, 70 people. It's a big group. Not everybody has transitioned their personal registrations over to the new RIA, but most have. So that's going to be a
and the
sizable
team is,
loss. For
just so we're not sort of completely blind iteming it. The team is, what's the name of the firm?
Summit Wealth Group, Summit. I believe is the name.
There are a lot of summits out there. Yeah. This gets us back into RIA or steakhouse territory.
Listener,
I don't know if we've mentioned this before, a legendary quiz, legendary to those people who work at City RIA. So about 4 people.
One quiz. Of whom regularly listens, though.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Shout out Alex Rosenberg, former editor of Citywide RIA, who came up with a quiz where you had to work out whether the name of something was the name of a wealth management firm or the name of a steakhouse. We've definitely mentioned this before, and I think we promised to put a link in the description, so we'll do so again so that this whole section is a little more relevant than it otherwise might be. But yeah, a lot of summits out there. Okay, fantastic. So we don't know that it's related, but obviously the timing is interesting. It's a notable departure, and I suppose what we can say is that, you know, it may not be the last such departure that we see over the next 12 months. Again, whether that's all to do with this LPL deal or not, we can't say for certain. Okay, well, I think we've really covered LPL today. Did we have any other business?
No, I don't think I have enough time to get my Pokemon choice in.
Yeah, I promise you, as long as I'm hosting, we will never discuss Pokemons. But the next time I'm away, Ian, have at it. And on that note, well, thank you very much indeed, Andrew. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you.
Thank you, listener, for tuning in as ever. And we'll be back again next week. Goodbye.